coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK, the internet radio of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. I'm your host, Jamie Krieger. I am pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. At Resurrection, we have adult Bible study at 10 a.m. every Sunday while the children are in Sunday school. At 11 a.m., we gather for the Divine Service with Holy Communion. For more information about our congregation, go to resurrectionlutheran.org.uk. I'm also pastor of the Oxford Lutheran Mission. Pastor Tapani Simeoki and myself take turns to meet with the congregation there at 4:30 in the afternoon at St. Michael's and All Angels every second and fourth Sunday of the month. For more information about this, go to oxfordlutheran.co.uk. If you are nowhere near these congregations, go to lutheran.co.uk. This is the website of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, and it has information about all our congregations in England, Wales, and Scotland. I am also manager of Lutheran Radio UK. I hope you enjoy listening to our programs as much as we enjoy producing them for you. Find our entire schedule and the podcasts of all our programs at lutheranradio.co.uk. Welcome back to Worth Doing Badly here on Lutheran Radio UK and to this weekly survey of the Bible lessons for each Sunday of the church year with me, Jamie Krieger and David Weber. Today, we will be looking at the lessons for the ninth Sunday after Pentecost. And the lessons are Isaiah 55 verses 1 through 5, the Psalm is 136, the Epistle lesson is from Romans 5 verses 1 through 5, and the Gospel lesson is from Matthew chapter 14 verses 13 through 21. David, welcome back.
It's good to hear from you, Jamie.
It's good to have you back with us. So let's begin with the Gospel lesson. What's in it for us from Matthew 14?
Well, as we proceed in small incremental steps, each of these texts over the course of the weeks are there to edify us, and edification is a task of building up that works much like the same way that food does its work. It's so long as it's done repeatedly and that we ingest the right kind of food, we don't have to worry much about food having its effect. So the same thing, this is the way that Christ feeds us in the church is with this constant supply of texts focusing on the life of Jesus, which begins this section, having heard this, Jesus withdrew to a desolate place to be isolated. Having heard what, we would ask, having read that, and he had just received the bitter report that John the Baptist had suffered a humiliating beheading. And in order for Jesus dealt with this deeply disappointing turn of events by isolating himself in a place of desolation. Having heard this soul-wrenching report, Jesus does not try to move away by distraction. He rather goes further into the depths of despair by being in isolation in a place of desolation. He is going to let the whole sadness of the world be put on his shoulders, Isaiah says. The Bible speaks of our response to repeated disappointment with the phrase weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's the poisonous effect that our disappointments have on us and making us sad and filled with wrath. Jesus's retreat offers an alternative. Jesus did not retreat as an act of defeat. It was an act of defiance. He would walk into the teeth of despair and crush that despair. This is the point of which he's making here. So in isolation, Jesus dealt with the desolation of the whole universe, and then he emerges from that and again deals with the desolation of his followers who were hungry and sick. So the point of all this is that having heard this bitter news of John's beheading, Jesus would enter into the worst that the world could throw at him. He would enter into that emptiness and fill it with his fullness. This is what's going on here. So this is the meaning of the miraculous meal. And before Jesus distributes this meal that fills people and gives this gesture of fulfillment, he does two defiant gestures. First of all, he looks up, and then he gave thanks. Jesus looked up because in the ancient world, the symmetry and beauty of the heavens were a hopeful sign of our once and future life of fulfillment. Earth could be subdued by sadness and emptiness, but you look up, you see the movement of the heavens, and you are reminded that once and in our future, all things would come together. So before he gives thanks, he looks up, and then in a second act of defiance against despair and deprivation, he gives thanks for the food that would fill, even though that food was rather meager. He recognized that, he calls our attention to the fact that we should not judge a circumstance by its outward elements. So a few fish and a few loaves are sufficient when they're combined with the promise of Christ to overcome our emptiness of our disappointments with the filling that he brings. So Psalm extends this idea that somehow we defy the world of despair by looking to God and by expressing our gratitude with the verse, acclaim the Lord, for he is good, for his kindness is forever. Now, the psalmist recognizes that God's kindness is forever, but we live in the meantime between now and forever, and in that meantime, things can get very mean. This is why we need to acclaim the Lord, to say with our mouths what we believe, because the world shows no evidence of that, giving us reason to believe that we are the objects of God's kindness, and God's kindness endures forever. We all know that when we're stuck in suffering, in the meanness of the meantime, we acclaim the Lord's coming kindness, and we desire glimpses and foretastes of this kindness. But our problem is this. The psalm says that we await for God's salvation, and God alone performs these great wonders. Now, the only way there can be a great wonder is if conditions are hopeless. God cannot work a great wonder unless the world is in utter disrepair and despair. So for God to actually perform these great wonders, we must be in deep, dark despair, desiring that God intervene and save us. Our problem is that when we are in the thick of the emptiness, we believe that it's the emptiness and not kindness that endures forever. And so we acclaim the Lord. With our mouths, we express, like Jesus' expression of gratitude, that where there is God, there is hope, and that even then, even when it's hard to believe, our acclamation looks forward to God intervening with these great wonders. Now, Isaiah puts an interesting twist on the development of this passage of Jesus's defiance of despair. And Isaiah asks the question, why should you weigh out silver for what is not bread, and your substance for what does not sate? In what kind of economy does bread have greater value than silver? Isaiah seems to be asking. Now, he's not out to restructure the world's economy. He is rather pointing out the difference between what everyone assumes is valuable and what is truly valuable. In the long run, food repeatedly received with thanksgiving will give far more happiness than silver. Eating is good in itself. Silver is only good because it can buy food. And yet, people value silver over this bread that sustains. Food tastes so much better when someone else is picking up the bill. And so Isaiah imagines the goodness of food is accented even further when silver has no relevance, when our silver, when God himself is feeding us and we are feasting in heaven. So, and he's developing this idea that bread is far more beneficial to us than silver. This is the way it will be in heaven. We know from Revelation that feasting continues in heaven and the streets are paved in gold. In other words, silver, which is worth less than gold, is nothing but building material, having the value of concrete or asphalt. So what Isaiah is seeing is that the real value of things are the things that sustain our lives. And the real value, things with great value, like God's grace or the movements of heaven or hope, for God's intervention, because these things cannot be monetized. You cannot put a price tag on them. People will think that they lack value when in fact they transcend value. So these things are not valued until Isaiah understands suffering empties us of hope. When our repeated disappointments ruin our anticipation of the life to come, then we can see the true value of the things that actually fill our emptiness. This is why when Jesus is about to feed the hungry followers, he looks up and gives thanks because that food would be a foretaste of his intention to fill us with the fulfillment of his promise. And then it brings us to Romans 9. And I need to point out again, Romans 9, this section is not selected because it particularly fits with the other texts or with a common theme. It's because this is the Lectio Continuo that we're reading through Romans at this time. But the passage with a little bit of work does cast some interesting light on what we're discussing with Jesus as the fulfillment of our desires, especially in despair. Paul himself is in great sorrow, he says, and unceasing anguish in his heart. Now, Paul's sorrow and anxiety is not for himself. It is because he can't understand how his people, the Jews, would not or could not come to accept the truth of Christ's resurrection. And what's interesting is Paul personally suffered this tragic rejection. It wasn't just kind of an objective fact. It was something that he personally suffered because he couldn't figure out in his soul how this group of people who had their history, their covenants, their law, and their worship, which all these things express this desire to flourish forever, why did not all of that culminate in joyfully receiving the benefits of Christ's resurrection? It didn't make sense, but that was the fact. And this perplexed Paul so much to the point that he even wished to suffer in some way that would make Christ's salvation more appealing to his people. It's a hard text, and yet you understand that Paul does not take lightly the nature of Christ's promise. He cannot figure out why anybody would not, in fact, want this promise that Christ assured in his resurrection. Why, if you're hungry, wouldn't you want to be filled? And in all this, Paul expects that maybe the circumstances can change in which our deprivations, our despair, could somehow grab our attention to the promise that Christ makes and which was revealed there in the gospel. Maybe it's something like the huge disappointment that Jesus himself suffered in hearing that John the Baptist had been beheaded. So in all of these passages, there is a sense of which we should ask ourselves, I think, why do we fear disappointment? Why do we fear these things going badly when, in fact, this is the very condition that we need for in order for us to again come face to face with God's promises, the way that he keeps his promises? This is where we, in our own hearts and soul, experience the truth of the resurrection. Not when things are going well, but when things are falling apart, which may increases our desire for Christ to fulfill us.
Once again, David, thank you for helping us take a look at these lessons and for these wonderful insights. We look forward to welcoming you back again for the lessons for the 10th Sunday after Pentecost next week. Dear listener, join us again. And if you want to listen to the previous podcasts of this program, go to lutheranradio.co.uk or download the Lutheran Radio UK app from the platform that is right for you. David, thanks once again. Talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
Goodbye.